Okay, so as all of you know, Stu Redwine has been a big part of Sounds Profitable. He's one of my favorite people to get feedback on the creative side of podcasting. And truthfully, in the audio space, the creative side has been kind of ignored. It's a big part of what I talked about at Podcast Movement. And I believe that we're about to see a surge of agencies and production companies really focusing on the ads and building them up as creative content. But I got this text message from Stu probably about a month ago. We're a little bit late here, but he said, it's about to be the 100th birthday of audio advertising. Let's do a show. Now, we are a little bit late for that, but we got Stu here with us today for a special episode to discuss what was the first audio ads, what we've seen in the last 100 years, and what we can learn going forward. So, Stu, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for the lovely introduction. You're one of my favorite people, and it's always fun to be doing Sounds Profitable stuff. Thanks for taking me up on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. We don't dig enough into the creative side of things. It kind of feels bad sometimes. My background being in digital rich media, I remember the budgets we would put towards building ads and just kind of throwing them in there with the ad spend, right, for the technology side of it and not really considering them their own thing. And we are on the cusp of the podcast industry starting to hit that hiccup point and really having to make a decision on how do we charge for it? What do we build? What's unique? Not just giving bullet points to a host and hoping for the best. So you're the perfect person to give us a little bit of a history lesson on how to catch us up on what's happened in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, we were just talking about this a little before. It's like I'm endlessly fascinated with the history of advertising. And in general, I'm a fan of history. You know, summed up in the phrase, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. They don't totally stay the same. I think of, you know, Mark Twain's kind of view on history is history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. And, you know, as we all were in our history classes in school, they told us, like, you're doomed to repeat the past if you don't know what happened in the past. And so with audio, with our profession, what we do is like, okay, what has happened? What did they already do? And then also does that doesn't necessarily say that things are going to go a certain way, but it might give us some pointers on what to expect. So if we go back 100 years, more than 100 years ago, radio began to develop. People began to broadcast. There weren't a ton of stations. It kind of started like the internet with educators and things like that. When it came to sponsorships, people very quickly figured that out. I mean, we have been advertising as a human race since the beginning of human society, you know, and there's plenty to read about that. So we've been figuring out a way to trade time, you know, money for our goods and services for a very long time. So early days of audio, they're going, okay, well, hey, I'll give you some free records. And then will you mention my company? Yeah, that sounds fine. But nobody had really figured out, kind of like the early days of the internet, nobody had really figured out how to monetize it.
So, Stu, I have a question on that. You said trade records for mentioning a company. So is that like the model in like when we think of like Little League and whatnot, where it's just like sponsoring something and saying, oh, we're going to play this record or this new song, and it came from Sounds Profitable. They bought the record for us. Is that the first form we saw?
Precisely. Yeah, of course. Yeah, because it's going like, well, how are we going to fill all this time? And Sounds Profitable shows up. You know, Brian Barletta goes out and he buys a bunch of records, stacks of wax. And he says, hey, KDKA in Pittsburgh, I'm going to give you guys all these records. Just mention Sounds Profitable every hour. They're like, great, sounds good. We'll do it. Those were the early days. That's what they were doing. Nobody had figured out, how do I charge? Then AT&T steps into the space. So a couple things. AT&T had secured a vacuum tube patent that was very vital to the technology. So they had that. So they're interested in the space. Some of this stuff is going to start sounding familiar to our time, right? You know, it's like, oh, why are we coming into this? So AT&T is coming from they've been charging money for time for like 40 years as of 1922. But then they decided, okay, well, let's do this. Let's actually set a certain amount of money for time, just like we do on a phone call. If I would have called Mr. Barletta 100 years ago, they would charge me a certain amount of money for the number of minutes that I take. Not much has changed there either. So they go, for this broadcast, we're going to charge Hawthorne Court Apartments $50 to $100, depending on your source. Again, I'm not a historian, just a fan of history, but $50 to $100 for a 10-minute advertisement on WEAF in New York City, talking about, this was a representative of Hawthorne Court Apartments at about 5 o'clock in the evening, talking about the new Hawthorne Court Apartments and what you would get if you decided to live there.
So what we're saying here is AT&T, a phone company, charged and billed this by estimating the number of people that this advertisement hit and billing it based on the minutes that they would have charged if it was an individual call to each of them.
You're taking it to another level. I'm thinking probably that is possibly how they did the math. I know you're a math guy, Brian. I'm impressed with your mathematical. I'm impressed with your mathematical skills. You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if that's how they arrived at it. I bet one could even go back in time and I mean, just go look at the rates. Yeah, it's like, how did they come up with 50 to 100? Maybe it's that, like, and I mean, you got to realize, like, in 1920, when the first, you know, some consider November 2nd, 1920, when KDKA in Pittsburgh broadcast the presidential election that Warren G. Harding won in 1920, a significant date in radio history, that was only heard by 1,000 sets.
Wow.
Yeah. So in 1922 in New York, I don't know, you know, how many people were hearing that, but you bring up a good point. Maybe that's the way that the financial folks figured out how to come up with that exact price. Sometimes I feel like with a lot of this stuff, and you know, you've been around in podcasting in the early days, it's like, you just make it up. Like, you just make up a number, you know, you just go like, I don't know, what is this worth? Like, let's do this. But then
I think this works.
Yeah, exactly. But then market forces come into place and like, okay, now we see the invisible hand of the market and what does this thing actually cost? But, yeah, they came on, they talked for 10 minutes. I mean, it's amazing to me, like looking back, just a little bit more of like the fuller story. Hawthorne Court Apartments was at the end of the 7 line that had just been finished there in Queens, New York. It was surrounded by nature. There's actually a little clip from the ad, so why don't we play that?
Friends, you owe it to yourself and your family to leave the congested city and enjoy what nature intended you to enjoy. Visit our new apartment homes in Hawthorne Court, Jackson Heights, where you may enjoy community life in a friendly environment.
So you can hear there, that's not the original recording. They recreated it like 30 years later, but it gives you a sense of it. It's got that awesome, you know, mid-Atlantic or transatlantic accent in a friendly environment. And Hawthorne Court Apartments is still around. That ad ran on, I think it was August 28th. I don't know if we said that yet. It was August 28th. 1922. So we're 100 years, just right around 100 years later. And it ran through September 1st, 1922. Look at that, Brian. It's September 1st. We're doing this on the last day.
Go. That's when we're recording.
That's
right now.
Why we're recording it. Okay. Today. It worked out. I love it when things work out. So
we planned it.
Yeah, we planned it. So who knows? I mean, they spent what? That 28th, 29th, 30th, 31st, $500, maybe $250, $500. We got to think they filled the place up. It's a historical landmark now. It's got a beautiful interior court. They're larger apartments. I think they go for a pretty penny, but you can check it out. Hawthorne Court Apartments is still being lived in to this day.
And you know what's really crazy about that is that 30 years later, you're saying that they recreated it, right? We're somewhere between 15 and 20 years into podcasting. The idea that like in 10 to 15 years from now, someone will be like a historian on podcasting and recreating the ads that were lost to time. Hopefully not. I mean, maybe they're still being hosted, but that's really interesting to see that they realized how impactful that was. Like, what happened in that first 30 years that made them reflect on it enough to say, like, we got to do this now before it's gone?
You know, I mean, I think you've got recording. Who's recording it back then? And what medium would they record it on? How does one do that? That's the things have gotten much easier for us. I think, you know, something you got to look at is in 1921, there was 10 stations. In March of 1922, there's 27 stations. In May of 1922, there's 99 stations. This is starting to sound familiar.
Yeah.
In 1923, there's 556 stations.
It's a big jump.
Yeah, it's a big jump. And, you know, you had people, churches, newspapers, department stores. Those are the folks that are broadcasting. They're reading headlines. They're giving you important local news. They're giving you religious counsel, right? Or now I think that's kind of evolved, anything that's self-help or mindfulness, you know, that's like in the same kind of spirit of the religious shows that were on in the early days. And so you're doing this in a sense, it's like disposable content. It's incredibly hard to record in those days. So a lot's going to be lost from, so it's really a credit, I think, to the folks 30 years later that they even went to the trouble to make us that, you know, re-recording. That's special that they did that, because they were, you know, within living memory of it.
Yeah. And the full ad for the original one was 10 minutes long, which is basically a branded podcast episode when you think about it in today's format. I mean, 10 minutes, if I'm remembering correctly, would be a massive chunk of an hour's ad slot in radio today. So what did we see from the evolution of that? I mean, obviously, when a new market happens, the advertiser, the buyer, has the most sway. They basically get to say, we have the money, this is what we want, this is what we want to get out of it. And they have a lot that they can ask for. As the industry matures a little bit, the publisher, the broadcaster, right, the host, gets to push back a little bit. And we start to move towards something more templatized. But 10 minutes was what we had in that first example. Where did we go from there?
Well, first of all, it wasn't until 1923. So this is in August of 1922, but things started moving really fast, right? So sometimes it's like we see those old black and white pictures and the films where like the frames are moving. And at least for me, it's like, oh, life was slower then. It was at a different pace. You know, it's like, I think these folks were just as just as hungry and just as ambitious as we are today. And they were moving fast. So it wasn't until 1923 that the Department of Communication put in some legislation that allowed people to freely sponsor programs. And so there you start to see, as the programming kind of started to change. And I think they began to just figure out that, like, oh, we can slice this into thinner and thinner pieces. I mean, OK, let's go back to 1901 in Europe before. Or at the, you know, in parallel with radio, and like where a lot of times the stuff was sounds profitable, where you start talking about the different technologies and the, you know, vast tagging or whatever it is, you know, I start going like, wow, this is, you know, that's some like, that's some brainiac kind of stuff where I'm sure I could know more about it if I chose to, but nevertheless, it's like there's all these different kind of formats and technologies. I mean, if we see in our lifetime, you go like VHS, Super VHS, DVD, like what technology is going to win? That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And so in Europe, there was a, like in Budapest, Hungary, there was Telephone Hermando, which was a station that you phoned into. Okay. It was a network of phone lines that you had to be connected to their network. And when you called in, you could hear the news every hour. So it's like Brian Barletta, like I'm going to call into Brian Barletta's news station. It's like ring, ring, ring. And then I'm listening on my phone and then it's the download, or it sounds profitable. And like, I'm listening to it and it's Shriya Sharma, or, you know, it's like, whatever, like I'm getting the program across the phone line. Those guys that had to read out across those phone lines, I guess they had a special name. They called them stenters, which is from way back in ancient Greece. These are the guys that would have been like shouting out at a war or whatever, like, you know, for charge. And you've got to have this loud voice, because with that telephone network, it was so expansive.
Yeah.
That now we take all this stuff for granted. Like, you can hear me loud and clear and we're thousands of miles apart. The longer the line got, it's kind of like an electrical line. Like, if you've ever done electricity at all, you know, the longer that line gets, it drops, signal drops. So these guys had to have super loud voices so that like the person at the far end of Telephone Hermando could listen. I'm saying all this to say, you were asking about carving up the hours.
Yep.
Look, this is 1901 and they were selling 12-second ads. So in 1 minute you'd call in, you'd listen to the news. And then in 1 minute they would have five advertisers back to back 12-second ads.
And that would be before the news happened.
You know, I'm not sure when it happened. That's a great point. I have heard recently that pre-rolls perform better than mid-rolls. So if they knew that, they put it at the beginning.
Well, it's smart because it's a phone call, right? And at that point, you were charged for it, or the receiving person was charged for it. And to be clear here, this wasn't like a recording on the other end. You're saying I would call, a human would answer it, they would read from a script, and we would hang up, and that was the transaction, right?
Well, you're calling and listening to the programming. So you know that Telephone Hermando at, like, here, I'm in Los Angeles at 10:08, let's say, 10:08 a.m. in 5 minutes. Is going to read the news. We better call in.
Oh, so they would have a bunch of lines and then they would basically turn that all over so everybody could hear this one person.
Yes, but it was their network.
Yeah. Well, you have to do the ads at the beginning or in the middle, because in that situation, the goal is get the news as fast as possible and hang up, right? Because there's a transactional element. There's a cost going to AT&T or whoever it was for the phone call. So it had to have been pre-roll or maybe mid-roll, but it would be really interesting to see what people hung up for, like what news that they wanted to listen to and they had to listen to, but they would abandon ads. But 12-second ads are exciting to me, mostly because, like, YouTube has dug into that, right? There's the really quick ads on YouTube, and it's funny because I think it's like 6 seconds before you can skip an ad. And if the ad tells me it's only like a 12-second ad or something, I might just let it all run instead of racing for that skip button. But if it's like a 3-minute ad or whatever the maximum length they do and it hits that 6-second mark, you bet that I'm pounding on that keyboard to try and skip that ad as fast as possible. So, you know, something smaller, it can get to the point. I mean, Sue, what are some popular ad jingles that are like 12 seconds or less?
Popular ad jingles that are 12 seconds or less. I mean, the one I always think of is
we got Geico.
Yes, that's a, you read my mind. I mean, that's the one. It's 15 minutes will save you 15% more on car insurance.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's we talk a lot about mnemonics and like sonic branding, and Les Binet, who talks a lot about this idea of, like, you know, advertising is training. It's Pavlovian training, you know? And so that's such a fantastic example of, like, you know, whether it's a sound, more saving, more doing, the Home Depot.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, or it's their song, or it's a statement, you know, like you're saying with 15 minutes will save you 15% or more on car insurance. You don't need a ton of time to communicate that idea and get it across. You know, for what I think of is, like, you know, for our advertisers at Oxford Road, where I'm vice president of creative services, is, you know, when you're wearing Tommy John, you're that much more comfortable, so you can do everything better. Or if you're hiring, you need Indeed. I think that one's fabulous. If you're hiring, you need Indeed.
I like that one a lot. I mean, think about it, like when we were all kids, like, what were the ads, that the jingles that stuck out to us, right? Everybody had a furniture store or a carpeting company or something that they heard the ad enough, and you could probably still remember either the jingle or the phone number that they had to get you to remember a number. We're not talking about a promo code. We're not talking about a vanity URL. We're not talking about solving a problem. How does that child look at their parent and say, like, you know, call 1-800-BOBS discount furniture or whatever it was, right? Or, you know, Jordan's Furniture in Massachusetts. I will always remember that. Quality, comfort, and price. That's nice. You know, like, these are ones that you'll never forget them, right? And the ads, the jingles, these things that they drill into you, it's to create repetition because you become an amplifier for it. If it's funny, you know, when somebody says, you'll never guess what happened, you know, there's the time when everybody responded like, dude, you're getting Adele, or, you know, someone had a problem and they would say, there's an app for that, right? Like, these quick mnemonic things that sit in there that are either funny or actually solve a problem. You don't need 60 seconds. You don't need 10 minutes. Sometimes you need a repetition of 12 seconds across a lot of places. And that's so cool to see that they grasped that back then. And it's exciting to see that we're starting to explore shorter form in podcasting now.
Yeah. Yes. And I think the record shows. I mean, I just, one more example, I'm thinking, because of Los Angeles and drive time, and, you know, the commute is not as big a piece of my life anymore. Don't go into the office nearly as much as pre-pandemic. But it's 1-877 cars for kids. K-A-R-S, Cars for Kids. 1-877 Cars for Kids. Donate your car today.
Yep. Yeah, and the billboards to back it up and all of it.
They trained this little doggy. Woof, woof. I know that one. And I think I donated a car. I think I actually donated a car with them. I think so. That's the real question, right? Does it work?
Yeah. And it clearly does. Yeah. Do you feel that we're going back to that?
We are going back to that. I think that evidence-based marketing, like the Ehrenberg Bass, all that work with Byron Sharp and How Brands Grow, evidence-based marketing, a scientific approach to marketing. And it's like, you know, the evolution of advertising in this country. We had bombast, we had big claims, we had large promise, we had showmanship. And that kind of sums up really the first couple hundred years in this country. If we, like, let's take it as a starting point of the country, but even the colonies before that. And a lot's changing with how goods are manufactured and distribution. But in general, it's miraculous powers. The soul of an advertisement is large promise. I am going to save you. This is going to save you and cure you. And it's almost like religious fervor level promises of advertisers. And then we go into, you know, the entry into the 21st century, the Industrial Revolution. It impacts everything. It impacts warfare. It impacts business. Of how do we make the trains run on time? How do we make everything more efficient? And these gentlemen that grew up, and women that grew up under the bombast of the snake oil salespeople, they come into advertising. They go, scientific advertising, right? And they start attempting it, where I think we're back now, long story short. So they're attempting it to go evidence-based, but they still had this flavor of like my way or the highway. Like they still had, there's this interesting element, John Caples even, of like, even though it sounds really good and he's giving you some evidence of responses, there's still this piece of it that feels like you either do it this way or you're out, which is like fundamentalism, kind of early 21st century stuff. Then we entered into this whole era of the big idea. Well, what was really going on? World War II had just ended. The United States was on top. We could not miss. You couldn't miss a shot. So everybody was a genius. And then when you put true genius on top of everybody being a genius, it's the genius creatives. It's the big ideas. It's television. It's satellite. The United States is unstoppable for decades. So the advertising geniuses, that's what it is. It's the big idea. And now we're finally swinging back. And I think it's a really good thing to kind of this melding of human potential and genius ideas and creativity, art, let's call it that, humanity, and science. And now we're melding the two. And I think what you're talking about, you're exactly right. We're in podcasting and in audio, that evidence-based marketing approach that's been evolving for the last 20, 30 years is about to unlock some really cool stuff in audio.
Yeah, I mean, and think about it, right? Serial was such a big hit, and everybody in podcasting, I think that that's like our Geico, like MailChimp, right? Where they say MailChimp wrong. Like everybody who was into podcasting at that time or has listened back to it, like you understand that MailChimp does email marketing or helps you with that. But like that was a fun commercial that like got your attention. It played on it. It was memorable. And I think we went really heavy evidence-based since then, right? Like I use it and you should use it too, which is great, the endorsement aspect of it. But we need to explore that creative side a little bit more. We need to have a little bit more fun with it. And that's tough because so much of what we're doing is, you know, direct-to-consumer marketing. It's actionable results. How many purchases did this specific ad like accomplish when we're not thinking about the brand aspect? Like, how does this ad help someone think better about your branding overall when they hit any of your other touch points? And that's, I think we agree that that's the next step, right? That's the next part for podcasting, is to reintroduce the creativity a little bit more heavy-handed, I think.
Yes, yes. And let me clarify, when I say evidence-based, what I mean is the evidence of how something performed.
Gotcha.
Not necessarily evidence in a message. So what I'm saying is, by seeing that, like, yeah, that like Les Benet's work, you know, a lot of what has been shown is that the more creative, the more brand focus, like the stuff you're calling for,
yeah,
over the long haul, is the more, has the more substantial business impact for an advertiser. So the evidence, when I say the evidence, is that we finally now have, like, it's not Don Draper smoking a cigarette, pontificating, and just trust me, right? And then it's not, we're going to do only boring stuff, and you have to follow this exact rigid formula. And it's, and then what's funny is, like, what's in there? Trust me. Okay. So now it's like, okay, well, let's look at what were all of the business impacts. What's the entire picture across all our comms? How are all of our messages working together? Fundamentally, advertising, in my view, is a part of marketing, which is a business practice, which is outbound sales.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's see how all of our outbound sales are working together, and our inbound sales and our PR, like everything. Let's see how it's all working together. This is a piece of that. How is this impacting that? That's the evidence, when I'm saying evidence. And then what you might find is the best thing that you could do in your audio advertising is buy a 6 or a 12 second ad on every podcast known to man and just say, sounds profitable, sounds profitable, download it now.
But what we miss there, and I love that, is,
thank you. Yeah, you can have it. It's yours.
Thank you. I appreciate it. There's no easy way to buy that today, right? Because we buy a spot, and it's not clear, like, is it, like, there's a limited number of ad spots in a show, and there's a limited number of ads in each, you know, bundle.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But it's like, is it total minutes, right? Is this ad break a maximum of 2 minutes, meaning that one person can buy a 2 minute ad, or four people can buy a 30 second ad, or they actually cap it at three people, and so it can be one minute ad and 2 30 second ads. It's not really clear, right? We don't have a standardized format. So that's awesome. That 12-second thing's awesome. But today, what it would take would be someone to approach that as a brand new thing, right? Say, hey, don't use this as an ad slot. Just do it as a baked in, or do it as something small. Just push it in there. Don't cannibalize something else you have. Don't charge me for the 30, 60, 90 second for this 12-second thing, and really push for something new. I think that the people that are willing to take risks on that are going to be what helped define what's next in this space, right? We don't have our 320 by 50 size banner, right? We don't have these standard templates for what these things are. Podcasting right now reminds me a lot of, like, the 15 seconds that we allowed native advertising to do what they want. And if you're not familiar, native advertising is if you ever went to a website and it was, like, branded, they skinned the whole thing, and it's like, you know, the next Guardians of the Galaxy movie is the whole background of it. That was incredibly custom for a very short period of time. And then everybody in digital marketing was just like, nah, make it a format, create a standard for this, follow along with it. You can get as creative as you want in that standard, but we need to be able to transact at it in a specific way. And that's why this push towards programmatic, this push towards standards, I think gets us out of, let's say, the bullshit, honestly, of what is an audio ad, like how long is it, you know, what the placement is, all of that. It formats that. And then we get to say, well, what do we do with that time? How do we make it content? How do we make it compelling? How do we make more podcast ads that people are singing, or people are responding back when someone says, you'll never guess what happened? And they'll be like, you signed up for MailChimp, right? Like, what is the next innovation there? And that's the next step in podcasting. We can look at this 100 years and kind of learn from it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, from an early conversation you and I had before talking here, is this idea of, like, you know, when you look at Telephone Hermando, or this idea of those audio newspapers, and then they're across telephone lines, and then there's radio here, but here we commercialized it pretty quickly. And in across the pond, you know, in the UK, it's a different story. So these things they're not predetermined. And so they had a 10 minute ad, and there's 12 second ads. And we were talking about, like, you know, radio's the grandparent. I don't know. It's the parent. It's just like, wow, your parent is really old, at 100 years. So I don't know. Seems like the grandchild is podcasting, but it's sort of this idea from our lives, I guess. Like, you don't have to grow up just like your parent. It's not predetermined. So on the one hand, there is this value, and I'm hearing you say that, like there is this value in going formats, 60 seconds. And then you look at radio and it's like, whatever, from talking to Pierre, it's like 15 to 20% or 15% of every hour is advertising in radio. Well, podcast, you know, the magic of it is like, oh, there's one ad, there's two ads. And now with, with dynamically inserted, like, are we just turning it into radio? And like, you're going to grow up to be just like your dad, you know? And it's like, oh my gosh, is that what's going on? And then at the same time, it's like, well, push, like if you're the advertiser, like people listening to Sounds Profitable, you know, if you're the advertiser, you're the agency, like we built this city on new ideas. Nobody did this until they did this. And there's still reward in the marketplace for that. You want to do 12 second ads of singing? Do it. Make them figure it out. Right. I mean, and they're selling air. We're selling air.
Yeah.
Like, does it change anything? It's not like they got to go get the 12 second widget off the shelf in the back. It's like, you know, there's a way. We had an advertiser that we wanted to use a sound effect like in every single ad across podcast and radio. And you would think, like, even with you and me talking right now, it's like, hey, Brian, I'm going to send you a sound effect. Will you play it during our conversation? It's like, man, Stu, I don't know. That's going to be a challenge. We just don't have the technology. But it's like, you know, we're talking to producers at radio stations, satellite radio, going like, hey guys, I know you have the boards. I know there's a way to do it. I just know no one's ever said we know no one said to do it before. So we're asking for something new, but you know what? Did 100% everybody do it? No. But did a lot of them figure it out? Yeah. And did that create a mnemonic? And like what we were talking about earlier, this branding device that's training across all these different audio formats? Yes. So I'm just saying, I'm with you on going, let's formalize and create standards. And then I'm also saying, like, kind of speaking out of both sides of my mouth, I guess I'm saying, you want to do 12 second ads? You want to do 8 second ads? Come to ask us to do it. Let's do it.
Yeah. It's funny because the standards work really well at the entry level and at the top, it seems. The middle is the sweet spot, right? Because if you think about it, it's where you have massive growth as a podcaster and you also retain some of that control. Like, not a Rogan fan in any capacity, but think about it. I bet you he provided infinitely more value to his advertisers before he went to Spotify when he could do whatever he wanted. Someone came to him with a product that he really believed in or wanted to be a part of or wanted to do something longer. He could just do it because the format wasn't there. It was a partnership, right? It was content. It was part of everything. But then when you get so big that you sell, that you license, that you give somebody else access to it, they lose that touch, right? Podcasting has that touch. There's an article, I think Marketing Brew did an article where basically, you know, the guy from The Office was saying, I love podcasting because I get to endorse products. These are things that would be too expensive to have me on their commercial or other things, but I get to have that personal touch there. The bigger you get, the less that advertiser is in the same call with that personality, the more you have to follow that template of radio. You have to become the parent. So I think we're still figuring that out. Like, too big might just mean replicating radio because it works and you're not going to lose people. You'll still gain more people than you'll lose. The content has value and it has hit mass appeal and it'll continue to snowball. But that area right before that, where you can really say, let's do something custom. Let's take advantage of this. The host and the talent get on the phone with the advertiser. I think that's podcasting's sweet spot. And even as a technology geek, bake it in. Do whatever you want there. It's about the relationship, and you can make the math work for anything. When you get obsessed with the math, it becomes a template. It becomes big machine. And that is a lot of what I deal with, and I think that that's good for a growing industry. But if you can avoid that step, if you can manage it yourself, you'll have the most fun. You'll drive the best results because it'll be genuine. And I think you could probably make a lot more money.
Yeah, I think possibly. I mean, I agree with all of that. Your last statement, make a lot more money. I'm like, interesting. I wonder. I think so. I think it's all of these things. I think it's the scale. I think it's the, you know, repetition. I think there's a spots and dots component, kind of like what we've been talking about. And then I think you're right. I think there's always pushing for the X factor because that's where the bigger pot of gold is at the end of that, of always pushing. And I think to not be afraid of that, you know, wherever you are in the ecosystem, speak up. have a creative idea. I think to kind of loop it back around to 100 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, as of 1924, there was the Ever Ready Battery Hour. And they sponsored a whole hour of programming. So maybe you couldn't do an hour, but a branded podcast. I don't know. I'm just something to look at. And the host was Wendell Hall on the Ever Ready Battery Hour. And turns out you needed Ever Ready batteries for most radios. So, you know, that was like, you want to talk about marketing in the right spot to the right audience. That's what you're going to need to keep listening. And Wendell Hall, this is funny because it just sounds like something from, did you see what this latest TikToker did? Wendell Hall got married on the air in 1924.
Yeah.
So he's an influencer. He's a personality. This is, you know, 1924 on air to get more likes, shares and subscribes and follows. Right. So the more things change, the more they stay the same. History doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme. And no matter what, you're absolutely right. Audio is more than just another way to advertise and communicate. Now, is it a good idea to, if you listen to The Wizard of Ads, this Roy Williams from Austin, Texas, great material, awesome, really niche, you know, kind of style, I guess I should say, but well worth The Wizard of Ads. Read everything that he has put out. And he talks about when it comes to audio, any schedule that he would want to look at would be on 24/7, 7 days a week, 365. He doesn't even want to look at a schedule that isn't doing that. Be everywhere all the time. And we can all think of the podcast advertisers that did that, and they make it into SNL skits, right? Because everybody knows their name.
That's true.
Police brought back the bike, but not the boy. Bike, but no boy. Because the boy was dead. Blue Apron. Don't have time to cook? Blue Apron has you covered with meals like zesty pork tacos.
Simultaneously, it's intimate. Look at this. You know, we're talking right now. We're talking through these mics. We're listening to each other. We're looking at each other. When it comes to how people have been listening, I even think of, like, it was predominantly in those days, housewives in those days, right? Stay-at-home moms and farmers that were listening to the radio. They had to go, they had to turn on the dial, they had to be intentional. And then it's audio has always been inherently intentional, even if now it's more on demand than it was in the past. You know, if you're drive time, you're listening to your hosts, you feel like you know these people. And that's part of what developed in the early days, is they figured out very, very quickly the hosts need to have personalities. At first, they were just stinters. They were just nobody. They were just a voice shouting as loudly as possible with clear enunciation. Then they became people. Very fast that happened, right? I mean, we're talking 1922, first commercial, 1924, Ever Ready battery Hour, and you've got somebody getting married on the air, right? But it's always been intimate. It's intimate. And so when it comes to your ads, I think there's got to be a part of your schedule, and it's part of the magic, just like you're saying, if not the magic of podcasting, is that intimacy with the host. And when you hear those magical words, I think they are the most powerful words in all of advertising. I use this, and you should too.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think that that type of ad, if put into any show, gives weight and, I guess, anchor to any other ads in that show. If the additional ads being announcer-ed or producer-ed, locally sold, or programmatic, and they fit the style and feel, the professionalism, the content of the ad matches the content of the show in a way that it feels like a good fit. Like in after these messages, our study, we did Athletic Greens and Jordan Harbinger. Those are a good fit. So that's really the thing. But having that, having the different levels, right? The host read live read, the host read scripted, the announcer read scripted, having all different levels in a show, one gives credibility to the next. You teach them, you teach the listeners, you're only going to put things that are quality in there, even if they're, you know, a little bit distant from you as the host. As you go along, it still adds value. And so, yeah, I think we're both on the same mindset that it's only been 100 years for audio ads. And it's funny to say only 100 years, but we have so much that we can learn from. We have so many things that we can avoid and don't have to do again. There's so much untreaded territory, and I encourage all of you to try it. Thank you, Stu, so much for joining us today. And honestly, if you are interested in learning more about audio creative, please reach out to Stu. We'll put his LinkedIn in the episode description. He's got another article he's working on. We're hoping to get that out by the end of the year. And, you know, hopefully at future events like our next sponsor-based event in November in LA and New York, Stu will be in attendance. So thank you again for listening, and we hope to hear your great ad executions over the next 100 years of audio ads.